I imagine all eyes and ears are focused on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And what I'd like to do is analyze how it impacts Israel. Ideally, Israel would never have wanted this invasion to occur because it has very complicated and mixed interests. It would really not want to be involved if it had the choice. But it does not have the choice. There are between 7,000 and 8,000 Ukrainian Jews inside Ukraine, according to the Jerusalem Post. Ukraine was once a haven for Jews. At the end of the 19th century, for example, if you take the city of Odessa, which was a jewel of the Russian Empire, Odessa had the third largest Jewish population in the world, after New York, number one, Warsaw, number two. And then Jewish pogroms started to occur in a major way in the early 20th century. And of course, the Nazi genocide happened in World War II. As many as 250,000 Jews, just in Odessa alone and the immediate kind of surrounding area, were killed, perished during World War II, 250,000 Jews in Odessa and the surrounding area. If you'd like more detail to learn about the history of the Jews in Ukraine, particularly these terrible occurrences I'm talking about, there's an article linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist at tangents.com. It's called "For Ukraine's Jews, the Threat of War Stirs Memories of Past Horrors." It's written by Michael Schwartz of the New York Times. By the time the Soviet Union collapsed, Jews, who once were about half of the population of Odessa, made up only 6%. And now Ukraine's Jews are fleeing all over again. About 10,000 Ukrainian Jews are expected to do what's called Aliyah and move to Israel from the Jewish diaspora. That's what Aliyah is, when Jews from the diaspora come to Israel to make their home. They call it returning home. And about 10,000 are expected to do so and move to Israel in the coming weeks. This is according to government officials as they informed the Jerusalem Post. And that's where I got the information. Israel already has many citizens of Russian and Ukrainian origin. Israel's Ministry of Immigration and Absorption stated, quote, "We call on the Jews of Ukraine to immigrate to Israel, your home," unquote. Last year, the total amount of Jews who made Aliyah from Eastern Europe to Israel, a little over 13,000. So 10,000 from Ukraine in 1 month, let's say, is a truly staggering number. And Israel offers these Ukrainian Jews free shelter and meals. I have not read anything about how this might impact increased settlement expansion to accommodate them in the illegally occupied West Bank. This will also help Israel's goal of demographic superiority over Palestinians. And also in Israel's apartheid system of governance, the newly arrived Jews will immediately be given rights and privileges that Palestinians have been living in this historic land, Palestine, for centuries and centuries. They do not receive these rights and privileges. But few will pay attention to that. Israel is providing safe haven at a time of need, and that's most important for many in evaluating the situation. So the New York Times came out with a report that Ukraine's president, President Zelensky, who is Jewish, he asked Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett to act as a mediator between Russia and Ukraine. And Israel has actually attempted to mediate between Ukraine and Russia several times in recent years. Every time they've done so, Putin has squashed the idea. And I doubt this time will be any different. But Israel is facing a bit of a catch-22 because its best friend, as we all know, is the U.S. government. But Russia is the power that gives Israel free rein to bomb away in Syria. And following Russia's intervention in the Syrian war in 2015, Israel set up a quote-unquote deconfliction mechanism with Russia to prevent accidentally clashing during the very many Israeli strikes against targets in Syria, for example, Iranian arms transfers. Russian forces have the ability to shoot down any Israeli jet they want to, but of course they are accommodating Israel in the bombing of these targets. Russian forces have sophisticated radar systems in Syria. They can lock on Israeli fighter jets that take off. Israel cannot afford to give this up. They can't afford to give up access to Iranian targets in Syria, so it has to satisfy Putin, but it also has to satisfy the United States. Ben Caspit of the news portal Al Monitor reported that last month, January the 24th, there was a joint aerial patrol by Russian and Syrian military jets along Israel's Golan Heights border. He said officials in Jerusalem took this move by Moscow as a warning that if Israel identifies too closely with the United States, it will pay a heavy price. Keep in mind, in 2018, Assad's regime in Syria reconquered the region near the Golan and largely defeated Syrian rebels near the border. Golan was part of Syria up until 1967, when it was conquered by Israel, and they have illegally occupied it since. The U.S. under Trump recognized the annexation. No president had done before that, and Biden will not reverse that. Hezbollah and Iran have taken advantage of this region being reconquered by Assad. They've established a presence closer to the Golan, so Russia's role is very vital for Israel, and they cannot mess up that relationship. Now, Israel has thrown bones Russia's way. They are very careful not to help Ukraine militarily or even defensively. The Israeli newspaper Yedioth Ahronoth reported Israel blocked U.S. efforts to equip Ukraine with the Iron Dome missile defense system. The Iron Dome was developed by Israel with the support of the Pentagon. And according to an agreement between Israel and the U.S., the system cannot be sold to a third-party state unless both Israel and the U.S. agree. And according to this newspaper report, equipping Ukraine with the missile defense system moments before a Russian invasion would have led to a serious crisis between Israel and Russia. But while voicing support for Israel's security needs, Russia, in Syria that is, Russia also reiterates its opposition to violations of Syrian sovereignty. And the Foreign Ministry spokeswoman from Russia, Maria Zakharova, recently stated that, quote, continuing strikes against targets inside Syria cause deep concern and are a crude violation of Syria's sovereignty and may trigger a sharp escalation of tensions. So on the one hand, they're accommodating Israel to have free rein in the skies in Syria. On the other hand, they have this warning. Israel has tried to keep mum on the invasion and maintain a veneer of neutrality. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, his first comment on the invasion, didn't even mention Russia, didn't even mention Putin. He said he reiterated his hope, this is quoting, reiterated his hope for a swift end to the fighting, and that he stands by the Ukrainian people in these difficult times, unquote. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid went further. He condemned the Russian attack on Ukraine. He called it a blatant violation of the international order. I think Russia really understands Israel's in this political bind. And today, Reuters had a headline that said, Russia sees coordination on Syria continuing after Israel condemns attack on Ukraine. Quote, this mechanism has proven to be useful and will continue to work, the Russian embassy in Israel said in a statement. But while voicing support for Israel now, Russia's tune could change. Tomorrow, the UN Security Council will have a vote. They'll have a special session of the UN General Assembly. They've only done it like 11 times since 1950 or so. It's a procedural vote. It only requires a 9-member majority. Russia does not have a veto. And I fully expect Israel will vote yes, because it will be, the U.S. will be way too upset with Israel for them to vote otherwise. Although keep in mind, when Israel did nothing following the 2014 Russian invasion of the Crimean Peninsula and abstained, the U.S. was very upset at Israel at the time. Another thing to think about with the U.S. imposing sanctions on Russia, what if the U.S. asks Israel to also join in on the sanctions? Might Russia then get upset and curtail some of the freedom that Israel enjoys bombing in Syria? Gidon Levy, the columnist in Haaretz, published a column just a couple of hours ago, and I always appreciate his writing. Quoting from the article, Israel has no right to criticize Russia, a country that had imposed violent occupation for more than 50 years, cannot criticize a 3-day occupation. Russia's justification for an invasion, the propaganda and the lies, seem taken from Israel's playbook every time it invaded Gaza or Lebanon. Israel always feels threatened, just like Russia, and both deny the national rights of the people it occupies. The Ukrainians are not a people, and neither are the Palestinians. Israel has an ancestral right to the West Bank, and Russia has a similar right to Ukraine. In the eyes of both, this means the mendacious right to sovereignty. The demonizing is also similar. The Ukrainians are Nazis, the Palestinians are terrorists. These are both propaganda lies. Gidon Levy continues, quote, the comic relief in this accursed war was provided by Foreign Minister Yair Lapid. The Russian attack on Ukraine is a serious breach of international order, quote unquote. Lapid, it seems, feels no shame in those words. Could it be that his self-awareness has run so low, or perhaps it's cynicism, hypocrisy, and double standards that have reached new heights? Israel controls another people and holds by force occupied territories for decades, contrary to the position of all international institutions, in fact, of the whole world. The fact that Israel thumbs its nose at decisions by the international community places it in the same category as Russia and denies it the right to criticize. The difference, Russia will apparently become a pariah and be penalized by harsh sanctions. Israel has never been punished for its aggression and has paid no price for ignoring the decisions of the international community. The attitude in Israel to violent opposition to occupation screams with double standards. The actions of the Ukrainian people against occupation are not only legitimate, they are even heroic. And what about the young Palestinian who does the same thing? He, of course, should be killed. An excerpt from the column that's linked at the Tangents playlist, the Gaza Corner section at tangents.com, from Gidon Levy that he wrote, at least he published it just a few hours ago. I'll end with a line from Jonathan Friedland, who's a columnist for The Guardian UK. He says, Putin understands something about the 21st century few of us want to face, that this is an age of impunity, especially for those who have a vast and deadly arsenal but no shame. And I would say Israel learned that lesson quite a long time ago.